Hello dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Follow Your Path. My name is Abdul Abid, I'm a surgical pathology fellow at UPMC, and today we will be talking to Dr. Leilani Valdez. She is a chair of pathology and lab medicine at Citizens Medical Center in Victoria, Texas. I'm also joined today by a future pathologist, Casey Shuko. Welcome to the show, Dr. Valdez.
Hi, so glad to be here.
Starting off, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, where you went to medical school and did your residency?
I'd love to. I am a community pathologist. That's kind of what I call myself, since I am a pathologist that works in a small county hospital. Victoria has a population of about 80,000, but we draw from about 100 miles surrounding our community for medical services. And I actually grew up in Victoria, Texas, and I grew up the daughter of a community pathologist in Victoria, Texas. So I didn't get here directly, but I am familiar with this area. And what I mean by community pathologist, we have a county hospital here, and I do serve as the pathology director, the medical lab director of the hospital laboratory, and I sign out anatomic pathology, cytopathology. I'm dermpath boarded, so I sign out skin cases. We have 3 full-time pathologists here, and we share cases with each other. We do frozen sections. We do pretty much almost every job except autopsies. When I joined this practice over a decade ago, and they had already shifted the autopsy work outside of this facility. So unfortunately, for better or for worse, you can't get an autopsy in Victoria County currently. So all that to say, we run the blood bank. We pretty much do everything. So I like to say I'm a jack of all trades, but master of none, right? I have to know a little bit about everything. So I kind of had a little bit of a circuitous path to get to where I am back in Victoria, Texas. I said I grew up here as the daughter of a pathologist, but that's kind of a double-edged sword because I swore that I wasn't going to be a pathologist, and I even thought I wasn't going to be a doctor. So I went to college and I studied theater and English and got some experience doing marketing and public relations, and got a job right out of college doing just that. I really enjoyed it. It was good work until I got married and decided that I didn't want to travel for my job. I wanted to stay home with my new husband. So I thought, what am I going to do? And I thought, well, maybe I should be a doctor. And so I went back and I did all of my pre-meds. This was in California, Southern California. And decided to apply to medical school. And at that point, I said, you know what? I'm going to be a doctor, but I'm not going to be a pathologist because I'm a people person. And I want to see patients, and I want to do that. So I'm going to find a specialty that's not pathology. Of course, I knew what pathology was because I grew up with it. And what I didn't count on is getting to medical school. And back then I was part of the old curriculum where the whole first year was normal physiology and anatomy and biochemistry. And then year 2 was pathology. But I actually had to have a microscope for my med school, and they would give us glass slide tests for normal histology. And in the second year, they would show us tumors under glass and make us diagnose those. And I loved it. I loved that pattern recognition piece. It really spoke to me. I liked the idea of being able to solve a problem, a diagnostic problem, and kind of be that final answer. But I'm still convinced that I needed to see patients. So I went into third and fourth year thinking, I'm going to find that specialty that really speaks to me. And I really tried hard, but at the end of the day, I found myself really loving surgery, except for the fact that when they took the tumor out, I was following it out the door because I wanted to know what it was and wanted to have that answer. I didn't want to wait on the pathologist. I wanted to be the pathologist. And really what I realized when I dug in med school to those rotations was that as a pathologist, an active, engaged pathologist, I got to see people and be around people all the time, and I got to help them with their patients. So it all of a sudden the light bulb clicked, and I said, this is it. This is what I've been looking for, is an opportunity to solve problems and help other medical professionals solve the problems. And that was super fulfilling to me. So I went ahead and went into residency, and I also said I would never go home. But then when I was looking around to try and figure out what kind of pathology I wanted to practice, I realized that the ability to solve multiple different problems was what was most appealing. I didn't necessarily wanted to go down the path of the details of one particular organ system or one area, but I wanted to connect with other experts within pathology to help the medical community solve those problems. So for me, that was a really good next step in my evolution of what I wanted to do, is that understanding of I'm comfortable not knowing it all, but I want to help people get the information they need, whether that's consulting a colleague who has that in-depth knowledge in an organ system or on a complicated blood bank issue, or a molecular pathologist who understands which particular medical test would best answer that question for one of my colleagues that's helping patients within our community. So that's probably more information than you wanted for the first question, but that's what brought me here. And that's a little bit about what I do in my current role.
Yeah, no, that was a perfect response. No need to apologize. Simply love it. Love your story. Love the background. Love the enthusiasm, right? I think you touched on two things, activism and engagement. I think these two concepts tie into kind of our next question. In that, you know, how and when did you get interested in professionalism and communication throughout your path to pathology?
Well, the communication is the easy one, because as a background as a public relations professional, you know, I was out there trying to represent my clients or help them represent themselves and communicate their value clearly to their audience, right? And so I innately understood that, having been in that job, when I came to medicine and pathology and realized how critical it is to make sure you're communicating with your audience, be it a patient, being another clinician, being the nursing staff, the lab staff, the CEO of the hospital and administration. Your message and clearly communicating your message is so important. And what I realized is that we are excellent at educating future physicians. And this is across the board. It's not just pathology. But we're not so great about teaching physicians and medical professionals how to communicate well in any setting, right? Sometimes a little bit of attention is paid to how you communicate with a patient, but not enough, and definitely not enough when it comes to communicating with other colleagues within our field, right? And so as I'm going through my training, I'm kind of noticing that this is an area that's kind of missing. I had the advantage of seeing it from an outside perspective and how important it is with my clients in my previous career, but it really became apparent to me that this was an opportunity for physicians and pathologists in particular to have a little more training. And fortunately for me, early on, I got involved with the CAP, the College of American Pathologists, and as a resident in the residents forum, and put myself out there at a meeting, applied for committees, and happened to meet a staff person who said, wait, you used to work in PR? We can kind of use that, right? And so they recommended that I attend the precursor to what we call the Engaged Leadership Academy, but it was called Spokesperson Training. And it was a little heavier on the media preparation side and how to speak to media and that sort of thing. And I'll be honest, my first response to going to this workshop was, oh no, I thought I was media training my clients. maybe they weren't getting this level of media training, because the CAP really does a nice job to prepare our members with, you know, training if you wanted to be get in front of the news camera or write a letter to the editor or communicate, right? So that's one piece of it. But then ELA in this current version, the Engaged Leadership Academy, also gives you the opportunity to practice speaking and delivering a clear message to a tailored audience, to whatever audience you're speaking to. So it's really good training for that. And so, you know, I've worked with the ELA and the precursor to that and in advocacy with the CAP and done all that work. And then recently, I joined the Board of Governors. And in that role, with discussions with Dr. Volk, our current president, we were discussing the fact that professionalism is one of these areas, kind of like that communications area, that's just not taught to medical professionals, physicians, pathologists. It is one of the ACGME pillars, and it's sort of expected that we're taught, but there's really, it's really one of these soft, subjective areas that are not as easy to teach, right? Because they're a little more squishy, a little more subjective. I have a daughter who is in high school, and we talk about the fact that English is a little squishy. It's a little more subjective. You know, there's not, it's not like her math class where there's right and wrong answers, right? So people tend to be a little, or at least physicians and science-minded, objective thinkers really tend to kind of not be real excited about having to learn or teach that, right? And there haven't been a lot of tools to help with that. And prior to, well, during this conversation about professionalism, Dr. Volk had mentioned that, and I had seen that there was a new book that the CAP put out called Professionalism for Pathologists, Professionalism and Ethics for Pathologists. And I was so excited about this book because for the first time, there was something tangible that you could sort of get that was specifically tailored to pathologists. There's a lot of medical ethics and professionalism literature done in general for physicians, but this book was specifically looking at pathologists. And I was giving the ethics lecture for the Texas Society of Pathologists meeting, and I was like, perfect, I'm going to use this book. And then Dr. Doman and Dr. Powell wrote the book, and Dr. Doman agreed to be my Q&A guest for that presentation. And why I thought that was necessary, if you read the book, you'll see, is that there are so many shades of gray, like all medicine, right? There's very little that we do is black and white. And I talk about that all the time. We work in the gray, right? There is no always and never in medicine, right? There's always going to be that outlier. So, but with professionalism and ethics, you really don't get that right or wrong answer. You talk through a scenario and what some of the ways you can handle that scenario might be for the best outcome. And so the book really, I feel, does a nice job because it uses scenarios to train, right? What happens when you come up against this situation? How can you handle it? What should you be thinking about? And That's why this is difficult to teach, because there may not be a right answer. There may be things you can do that will provide for a slightly better outcome because they are done thoughtfully and professionally and ethically. But it's not one of those things that you can kind of quiz someone and say, you got that right, you got that right, you got that right, because everyone's got a little different approach. So that led to Dr. Volk taking an initiative, which I helped look into, to redo our code of ethics and professionalism. The CAP just sort of re-evaluated that and made sure that it was modern and aligned with the AMA and other medical societies and what we are saying we sort of stand for, help guide our members. And we also created the Professionalism and Ethics Committee, which will ramp up this year. And they've got a 3-year plan worth of really good objectives to meet to really help fill out this area, right? To give residency programs some ideas to support their curriculum in addition to this book. And so Dr. Powell is excellent, and this is her area of expertise and her passion, and she's going to chair that. And so I think we can look for really great things to come out of that work and hopefully get sort of distributed to the residency programs to help support their curriculum for that ACGME requirement.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful. You have already answered 2 more of my questions. So I'm going to skip to what I can ask you. So what do you find as a community pathologist? What do you find is the most gratifying aspect of your job?
Honestly, I feel like I help people every day, right? I really do. Like every day, and oftentimes, most times, I'm not sure what that help is going to be when I start the day. Right? It could be nothing to do with the microscope, or it could be everything to do with the microscope. And I don't know what that day is going to bring. And you know, some people say, oh, that's really unnerving. But it's really exciting because you can be like, you know what? I helped that doctor. I helped that nurse. I helped that hospital administrator. And I helped that patient, right? And to be helpful every day is kind of one of, I don't know, it really gets me going. I get really jazzed if I can be helpful, right? That whole, I need to see patients to be helping patients. I feel helpful even, you know, with every patient's biopsy I look at, with every physician who has a question about what lab test to order, what lab tests mean, even in like breast conference this morning, right? So breast conference is this opportunity where you've got a surgeon and a medical oncologist, a radiation oncologist, a radiologist, all in the room together, and 2 pathologists, because we always come because we're there. And you're, as a pathologist, I'm asking questions that help with that discussion. And everyone leaves the room feeling like we have tapped the resources available to us and the brain power of this diverse group of very passionate, engaged physicians to find the path that is the best treatment for the patient, the best treatment plan for the patient. And I mean, there is not a breast conference or a tumor ward I go to where we in pathology don't have something significant to add. In today's case, this patient had a history of a reduction mammoplasty, and then a year later had a diagnosis of metastatic cancer. And the question to pathology was, tell us what you do with that tissue that comes from that reduction mammoplasty that's from plastics. And, you know, they had no idea that we treat it the same way that we do any breast tissue that's removed from the patient, right? Mm. That we're going to look, you know, maybe they thought it just gets not even submitted to pathology or just gross exam. But we said to let them know that and give them kind of a reminder of the limitations of that exam, because it's not like we're looking microscopically at the whole thing, but it gave them some comfort. Right? That there wasn't a 4-centimeter lesion in that mammoplasty tissue that got missed, right? Because we're going to section it in 1-centimeter red blood style and make sure that that's not there. So, what I love being helpful, but a big piece of that, and the reason why I really do love being a community pathologist, is being present, right? Being there at that tumor board, being there in the physician's lounge and available for someone to, hey, I have this case, maybe you can help me, kind of questions. Building that rapport with the physician staff, with the nursing staff, with the laboratory staff. All of that lets me be more helpful, right? So it goes back to that communications piece, and professionalism piece, where you develop a relationship, where you make yourself accessible so that people trust you and they know they can rely on you and you're honest. One real thing that I like to remind people in community pathologists is that we need not know everything, and we need to be honest about the limits of our knowledge, right? And there's no harm in knowing that limit to your knowledge, right? There are often times when I get asked a question and I don't know for sure what the answer is. I have an idea, but I do need to go phone a friend, look something up, remind myself. And the worst thing you can do is to say with confidence, oh, it's this, and really not be sure. There's no problem to communicate, you know what, I think I have an idea of what might be going on here, or what the answer to that question is. Give me a minute, I'll get back to you, or give me an hour and I'll get back to you. As long as you're clear and you're communicating clearly with the other person, they'll respect that. One piece of advice that my pathologist father gave me while I was training in residency, when I called crying, there was no way I was going to learn all these zebras that are coming underneath my microscope, and how in the world was I going to do this job because there are so many different things. He said, no, you're looking at it wrong. You need to learn during residency and get very comfortable learning what you don't know. You need to recognize where the limits of your knowledge are and recognize what you don't know. Your patients deserve that, right? No ego. You don't know, you get help, right? Be confident in the things that you do know, but don't be confident if you don't know it, right? So I'll give you an example. So you know what a tubular adenoma looks like. I looked at several of those today. Straightforward, no problem. But if there's something not quite right about it, you need to stop and you say, wait a minute, is this actually a tubular adenoma, or am I looking at something else? You know, and that's the decision point you have to make. So it's really, and at that point, I can ask a colleague to take a look and see, you know, am I missing something here? It doesn't quite look right to me. And it could be that you're just having one of those days and it just didn't look right for a certain reason. And he says, no, it is a tubular adenoma, you're fine. But it doesn't hurt to have that double check if you have, and if your gut in any way says, not quite right, I'm going to take a minute, right? Or I'm going to get some help. Your patients deserve that. They deserve that that option for you to sort of get a little bit of assistance on their case. And that's okay. But it can be really hard coming out of training to say, what do you mean? I have to know everything. I have to do. No, you don't. You just got to recognize when it's time to get some help.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Just one last question. For anyone who's thinking about academia versus private practice, I know you touched on that earlier, but how would you help them through that that decision? Like, what should they consider in each of those categories?
I think the thing I would think about the most is kind of what I described earlier. Not to say that academic jobs don't require you to know lots of different things and a little bit of everything, because there are definitely academic jobs that do require you to be able to be responsive to lots of different situations. That's yeah. Not at all. But academics versus community come with an understanding that you, a couple things, right? You want to pursue some sort of research capacity, right? So you've got to have something you feel strongly enough about. And it doesn't have to be a tumor type. It can be, you know, practice improvement. It can be data. It can be anything that you feel like you want to dig deeper in and figure out how to improve. It's not to say I don't do my own little mini studies in my own hospital, right? We're required as lab directors to make sure we're doing quality improvement initiatives. They just may not get published, right? You got to be able to be comfortable writing paper. And for me, I had written on deadline for a living in my PR job, and I had decided that the only thing I really want to write a lot of are pathology reports. I don't really think I want to write a bunch of white papers or that kind of stuff, at least then, right? So that kind of made it a little more obvious to me that academics was probably not going to be my thing, right? And then the other thing is specialization, right? Generally, you know, you can generalize a lot of things, but generally, academics need to have more of a focus area. And so if you like to dig in deep to something, then that's probably going to be a better fit for you. It's not to say you can't be an expert in private practice as well, because I have plenty of community pathologist colleagues who just sign out GI or just do cyto or that sort of thing. So you certainly can specialize that way too. And, you know, and academics, I mean, I rely on a lot of academics for my consults. When I don't know, when I get that little tickle, this isn't quite right, or I've not signed one out in a couple of years and it's something unusual, we rely on academic consults to sort of be our gold standard and to give our patients and our physicians confidence. You know, you may think, oh, well, if you're sending out this case, is your physician staff going to think you don't know what you're doing? On the contrary, they want to know that you're using a higher level resource, because that makes them understand that this is a subtle case and that you wanted the best, most accurate diagnosis for that patient.
Yeah, great. That's wonderful. Thank you very much, Dr. Valdez. That's our show for today, folks. You can find Dr. Valdez on Twitter. Her Twitter handle is @LeilaniCLV. Thank you very much for listening to us. If you like the show, please like and subscribe to our channels on YouTube, Podbean, and Apple. And we'll be back with another episode soon.
Special thank you to our listeners. Until next time, enjoy an excerpt from an upcoming interview with Dr. Joe Malachewski.
I'm pulling up echoes. I'm looking at how the heart's functioning. I'm looking at laboratory values, and I'm looking at serum studies, and I'm looking at all these other things, kind of this composite amalgamation of all the data that's coming from the patient, and I'm putting all of that together. And so I think it's specifically what drives many folks away from medical areas. Many surgical pathologists love the fact that cases are self-contained. Like I can derive a diagnosis in 90% of my cases just by what's on the slide. I don't need any of that other information. In cardiac pathology, it's not that at all. It's digging through the record, putting together the pieces, understanding the complexities and the nuance, often writing very long narrative comments that explain why a patient may be having clinically significant dysfunction. And that appealed to me. That appealed to kind of my sense. I love physiology. I love thinking about, you know, the way that the heart's working and kind of the hemodynamic loading conditions that a heart might be under and how changes at the gene or the protein level can impact the heart and kind of, you know, present in myriad ways. So